Okay, so Rabosai. So, our story so far, we've been talking about how various principles of ne'amanus, of credibility, of decision-making and the like, impact conflicts between people in monetary issues. So, the setting of our Mishnah, if you remember from before Yantiv, is how do we address the fact, let's say, if there is a dispute between a former husband and wife, you have a situation where a marriage ends either due to divorce or to the husband passing away, and the question is the ksuba of the wife. So what type of ksuba is she entitled to if there is a difference in opinion? And in our Mishnah, the situation is the wife maintains that she was a psula, therefore she's entitled to a ksuba of 200, and the husband, or his inheritors, depending on which circumstance we're talking about, argues and says, no, when they got married, she was not a basula, she was, let's say, an almana, and therefore she only gets 100. So there is a dispute of at least half the amount. Again, how exactly you calculate, it's a different story. Let's, for simplicity's sake, say there is a dispute about half the amount. And the question is, who gets believed? So our Mishnah tells us that if there is some type of edus, we haven't really gone into too much detail about what level of edus it rises to, but if there is some supporting evidence for her position that she was married as a psula, so then she wins. Right? And one of the foundational questions that we ask is, you know, what's the key question here? Right, if we're trying to figure out who's won, who wins, who gets the default judgment, who starts from the premise of winning before we throw in other information. So what's the foundational question that we've been dealing with? Right, what's the first question to ask? Who is the muhsak, right? Who, you know, how exactly we dealt with that a little bit in the context of understanding the chi of ksuba. Right? Who starts off with the money in his pocket, so to speak? Is this essentially the husband's money that the wife is claiming, putting him in the possession of position of being the muhzak? Or should we say that the chi of ksuba shifts things somehow, that really she's the muhzakes, and she starts off with the benefit? So the Gemara essentially, if you saw the Gemara, which was the first on the list of the Marma Kamos, right, so what's the opening premise of the Gemara? And the bottom of Tezayin and Aleph, what does the Gemara want to ask about? Right, that essentially, with no Edom, why does
why
he...
Not just use
right, why not use Rav? Right, exactly, right. But the premise seems to be that without Edom, the husband wins. That's what it sounds like. Right, it sounds like the default is that if we don't have this extra point on her behalf, he's going to win. So asks the Gemara, why should that be? Right? So it's asking at the very bottom of this page. So the Chavan, the Rov Noshen Besulus Nisos. So since the Rov seems to be that the woman is likely Besulus at the time of marriage, that's where the majority lands. So then, it would seem like she should have the default judgment. So Kilo also, hey, did I have it? Right, so why should we credit him? Why don't we credit her? Why don't we say that she has the rove on her side? Now, the Gemara is going to then say something interesting, which we probably won't get to today. We can just leave very few lines of Gemara. There's a lot to say about. But let's just focus for now on the question. Right? So is that really a given, that we should give her the default because of a rove? What obstacles do you have to saying such a thing? Right, does that strike you as the most logical opening premise? Now we're trying to figure out who should have the defaults, who starts off in the winning position. So now the Gemara seems to say she should start off in the winning position because of the rove. Is that such an obvious point to make, Ari?
Well, she has a chazaka of rove, and he has a chazaka of mosak, actually.
Okay, you're using the word chazaka loosely, which is okay, but just... So you shouldn't confuse yourself, but okay, just to note that you're going to use those things.
He has 100% ownership of the money that he has.
Okay.
And that she's trying to claim. and she has whatever it is, majority kind of chazaka. So perhaps 100% would outweigh majority.
Okay, you could say it that way, and it's a valid way, but you could also draw upon some knowledge to ask the question a little bit differently. Yes?
We know that, you know, when I'm on
the road. Oh, okay, so that's one initial point to bring up, right? So our normal attitude, we've alluded to this in the previous weeks without going into too much detail, is that we normally work off an assumption of Ein Holchin B'Mamon Acher HaRov. Right, that we don't follow Rov in monetary matters, which really the full sentence is that we're not Motzi Min HaMuchzak in Rov. I mean, not the only way to apply it, but we generally at least see it that way, that if somebody already has the money and somebody else wants to get it, Reuben has money, Shimon wants to get it from him, and Shimon's power is a Rov, so we don't use that robe to take money away from Reuben. So that should make this question a non-starter. Right, who cares that she has a robe? He is the muchzuk, it's his money. So therefore, I wouldn't think that her robe should make a difference. Right, so what does Tosus say to that? Very short Tosus, very, very short Tosus on this page. Last Tosus on the page. And so Tosus tells you, without even filling in the details, that, well, the principle of Ein Holchin B'Mamon Acher HaRov is a machlokes in Shas. It's a machlokes Rav and Shmuel. It's Shmuel who maintains Ein Holchin B'Mamon Acher HaRov. And so says Tosus, this very short Tosus, last Tosus on the page, L'Rav Parach, the Islay Holchin B'Mamon Acher HaRov. Right, that this whole premise is only going according to the opinion that we're less familiar with. Rav's opinion, that Rov could work for Mom. But you're right, Taka, if you follow Shmuel, like we normally assume, that Ein Holchin B'Mamon Acher Rov, this question wouldn't be asked. This question is following the opinion that is at odds with our normally understood halacha of Ein Holchin B'Mamon Acher Rov. That's what Tosu sounds like over here, that if you say Ein Holchin B'Mamon Acher Rov, you would not have asked this question. Okay? Yeah, Sammy?
Okay, maybe that's way out there, but is there a possibility that neither of them have a chazaka on the money? Is it possible like a basin or somebody like that? I don't know, when you go over to be up in the air a little bit.
Well, there is such a possibility. Not necessarily that Bezdin has it, but it's interesting to explore. That was actually, I think, our emphasis in the pre-Yontif weeks, that should we say that the Chi of Ksuba somehow unseats the chazaka. And you could come at it from a couple of ways, whether you want to say that that's the whole nature of the mitzvah, that's the whole nature of Tekanas Chazal, the question of also, we saw the Gemara about how Chazal went through various stages in legislation here in requiring that there be some physical representation of the debt. So I think there is some room to say that this chazaka has been unseated a little bit, and that was kind of the path we've been exploring a little bit before Yantif.
So,
so basically your question is very well taken from a couple of perspectives. You want to say, does it have to be true that this Gemara is an Oz with Ein Holchin B'Mamon Acher HaRov? Maybe it isn't. Maybe this is not a standard situation of that, because the Muchzuk is not really a Muchzuk. Maybe the man who has a Chiyuv Ksuba is not a Muchzuk. I think it's a fair question to ask. Is there any other way to ask the question? So, is this necessarily at odds with Ein Holchin B'Mamon Acher HaRov, or is there anything else to add into the mix? So, I didn't give you other Rishonim to look at here, but there are other Rishonim who say differently. So, for example, we could look at it together. Look at the Tosfos Yeshanim on the page here. What does Tosfos say? Let's take a look at Tosfos Yeshanim Oz Beis. Right, you see right off the bat that Tosfos Yeshanim does not assume like the Tosfos on the Daf. What is the first words of this Tosfos Yeshanim? I know we have different printings of the Gemara, but on my Daf, it's right here in front of me. It says Tosfos Yeshanim, Efsher Dafilu L'Shmuel Havalon L'Meizel Basam Ruba. It could be that this is not at odds with Shmuel, and that even Shmuel would agree that you could file a Rov. V'lo Acher Chezkes Mammon, and you should not necessarily follow the Chezkes Mammon. Why? Kevan de Chezkes HaGuf Misayeya LeRov. Uparach Shapir Afilu Alibay de Shmuel Kai. Afilu Alibay de Shmuel Kai Amay Damrina Le'el Kevan de Rev Nashim Sulis Nisus Heb. So, what do you see there? Sorry? Say it again, we're followed by what?
By the goof.
Well,
either at some point or another, we know, it's not like something like, we know at some point or another, you know, she's going to become a virgin or, you know, through marriage, you know, whatever it is. So that's why we don't follow rope, is because we don't follow rope by the goof, where we know you're going to become.
Awesome. You brought up a lot of interesting things in that one sentence. So let's just break it into a few parts. So what Tosfos Shanim is saying here is that she's got extra points on her side. Not yet, what you said a second ago. We'll come to that in a second. But what Tosfos Shanim says is that maybe Shmuel would agree, right? That normally Shmuel's opinion that we don't follow Rov to be Motzim and Amuchzah, right? Maybe here we would agree because she's not coming with nothing. Well, she put it because she had the rov, but she had more than the rov. Because she also has the Chezkes HaGuf. The Chezkes HaGuf sounds like it means that we know that at one point she was a psula. That was the status quo ante. We know that that used to be true. We don't have any evidence that it's no longer true. Or it's no longer true now, but we're interested in what happened before the wedding. Right, so we have no evidence that before she married this man, she was not a psula. So that's called a chazaka meikar, which in this case we call it a chezkes haguf, that we know that she started off as a psula. We have no contradictory information. So let's give her those points too. So she has a chazaka and a rov. So Shmuel, who says we don't follow a rov to take away from the muchzak, so that's true if it's just a rov. But if you have a rov and this Chezkes HaGuf, well, then even Shmuel would agree it's a worthwhile question.
In this case, when we say rov, does that mean the majority of women in the world are Pesula?
When they get married. So the way the Gemara phrases it here is that at the time that rov nashim besulos nisos, not necessarily, although your point, we'll have to come back to that too, but the phrase that appears here is that at the time of marriage, most women are besulos, and that we're only interested in what she was like before she married this guy. So that's, you know, we don't have to worry about the whole population of the world, we just have to figure out, it's an important question, right? It's a very important question, you know, when figuring out a rov. So what gets to be a part of the set, right? It's a statistical question, right? So what gets to be a part of the set? So the only set that we're interested in is the set of women at the time of marriage.
And Jewish women.
Right, really Jewish women is seen, but at the set of Jewish women at the time of marriage, maybe not, though that's not necessarily part of the sentence, but you're probably right. So most, and it's clear, as mine is that, it's not true, but you know, right. the time of the Gemara couldn't make the woman in the world, right? That most women at the time of marriage, that will be our population set, are besulos. So that creates a row.
Would the chazaka be strong enough on its own to ask the question?
It would seem like not. Although it's a fair question to explore. So for now, we don't have evidence that it would be, but hold on to that thought when we try to figure out what the chazaka does.
I thought that the Chezkes HaGuf relied on Rov, meaning the Svara of the Chezkes HaGuf, that
she was
the Sula, was the Rov. So it's supporting the Chezkes HaGuf. Was that the way Chezkes HaGuf?
Okay, so hold on to that thought for a second. That might be true also. But so you see, even though it was very subtly presented here on the daf, you just saw a major machlokus between Tosus and Tosus Shishana. Right? That you have to look carefully to see it. But essentially, according to Tosfos, if you say Ein Holcha Mammon Achar Rov, then forget about it. Her Rov Nashim Besulas Nisseis has no value. And according to Tosfos Shanim, no. You could say it even according to Shmuel, even Ein Holcha Mammon Achar Rov would make an exception for this case. So let's think about that machlokus for a second. Okay. So Tosfos Shanim's point, which is not only Tosfos Shanim, Balamor says like this also. Balamor, I didn't put it on today, But you may recall before Yontif, I put a Balamor and a Ramban about this, maybe been a couple weeks ago, so it's ancient history. But once upon a time, you may have seen this Balamor and this Ramban, that Balamor says something similar. That this woman is not coming just from Rove or from whatever else she has, she's also coming from Cheska Sagil. Now, let me ask you this question. Why would you disagree with the Tosis Mishnah? Right? Our Tosis, which gets pride of place, they score the prime slot on the daf. Tosis beats out Tosis Mishnah. So why does Tosis not accept this premise? Why would you disagree with what the Tosis Mishnah says? Right? Tosis Mishnah's position that Cheskas HaGuf gives her more power, and Shmuel would agree to that, at least possibly. Why would you not say like that? Why would you disagree with it? There's at least two ways, I think, to approach that question. So I'm interested in hearing those two ways. Why would you not say that the Cheskas HaGuf should make a difference here? So one say is I question the Cheskas HaGuf. I don't acknowledge if this Cheskas HaGuf is of any consequence. And indeed, at least one Rishon does that. The Ramban I just mentioned. If you look at the Ramban, you have a chance to look at it tomorrow. So the Ramban argues with Balamur. He says that there is no such Cheskas HaGuf. If you want, maybe we can look at it together for a second. So we can do this quickly. Again, this was on the Mar Makomos, not today, but an earlier Tekufa. So, yeah, here it is. That's the very beginning of the parak. Mochamas Hashem, in my Gemara, it is Sandaf. If you have this fancy Gemara, it's on the page Yudalad of the Dabbe Harif. So the Mechamas Hashem, the Ramban, questions the Balamor. So just to read you the key line, says the Ramban, She'ein ha'isha omedes b'chezke shelo niseis me'olam. V'ein lach ba ella rov. Taking a little bit out of context, but that's the important part for now, that the Ramban doesn't agree that there is such a chazaka. This idea that she was never nevelas, that she never had relations, this is not currently relevant to her. So why not? So some understand, I think this is a point that maybe Tzal was making beforehand, and I pushed him off. Or maybe it was a point that Josh was making beforehand, that some of the Achronim, like the Chasam Sofer and the Pnei Yeshua, they say this is called a Chazaka Ha'asui L'Hishtanos, meaning that it's a Chazaka that by its nature changes. And that, therefore, that's not such a solid Chazaka. If you want to say what was true yesterday is true today, so that's only true if it's the kind of thing which, by its nature, you leave it alone, it's probably going to stay the same. But if I say it was hot yesterday, it's going to be, therefore it's hot today, right? So that's not such a great chazaka, because you know the weather changes. This might be a too extreme of an example. But some things we know by their nature change, right? And therefore, the chazaka is not so powerful. So to give you maybe a closer example, let's say if I were to ask you 20 years from now, 30 years from now, when you're in your 50s, I'll ask you about this girl who's in your elementary class. Do you think she's married? So would you say, well, when I knew her in third grade, she was single, so chazaka, she's single? Right? How much credibility would that have to you? Right? Wouldn't have so much. You know, maybe she's still single, but the fact that she was single when you knew her in third grade is not going to carry so much weight, because many of the people who were single in third grade later got married. So the fact that she was single then is not going to really say, okay, I've got this glot proof that she must be single now, chazaka meikar. Sorry?
Not going to be any case of chazaka that can't change over time.
Well, all chazakas can change, right? Yeah. The question is, if you have no extra information, right? So you have to pick something. What's going to be your default, right? That's really our whole question here, is what's our default? So if I have no extra information, so then I should assume maybe that something that was true yesterday is true today. I have no reason to believe that it changed. Right? So, oh, you're still working at that job I spoke to you about a year ago. So, yeah, probably most people are still in the same jobs that they...
But that's not a roof case. That's a specific case. The
right, and that's not a rough case, it's a Chazaka Meikara case.
Right.
Right? So you're saying that, okay, well, it was true yesterday, it's probably true today, because I have no reason to think that anything changed.
Yeah, but is this talking about this specific case, or are you talking about
anything? No, in general. You're asking a question, when can you ever rely on a Chazaka Meikara? Yeah. It's that if I have two equal possibilities, and nothing changed, and I have no evidence that anything changed, all I know is it was true yesterday, I don't know anything else. So then, okay, then I'll assume that what was true yesterday is true today.
So what reason do we have to did that change?
Oh, so then the question is, how absolute is that in general? Right? How often is that the case? So what the Rambam, so according to the Balamor and the Tosfos Shan, will say, you have no reason. I know that this was true then, so it's probably true now. The question is, like you're asking then on the Ramban, so why would the Ramban think maybe it's not such a good chazaka? So the way some of the Achronim understand it is that this is the kind of thing that likely changes. You know, probably the example I just gave about your third grade classmate, that the fact that she was in third grade and she was single then doesn't carry so much weight because it is very likely, it's very possible, very natural for the intervening 40 years to mean that she would have gotten married in the middle. So therefore, to put too much weight in that chazaka is not going to be significant. You know, parenthetically, you know, one of my rabbis always complain if you ask me how you're doing, and you respond, Baruch Hashem, so you say, no, I know you're religious, I don't know how you're feeling. You know, because he says, oh, it's not an answer to say Baruch Hashem, because you know, it would be an answer if you say Baruch Hashem, fine. If you say Baruch Hashem, so what does that got to do with this question? So I always thought to defend Klal Yisrael that... it's not only that we're religious, that's also good, but it's not only that when you say Baruch Hashem, it's not a non-answer. It's a Chazaka Meikara answer. That the assumption was that he saw this person yesterday and he was fine yesterday. So if something had changed, he would say, Baruch Hashem, Rab Latov, but not doing so well. But if he doesn't say anything else, so you remind me of his Chazaka. So the fact that he doesn't contradict what you knew from yesterday, so I meant that, okay, I was fine yesterday, I was fine last week, and I'm fine today. Baruch Hashem, Chazaka Meikara. So we, halachic mind, so we believe in Chazaka Meikara. So I'll tell you another story about that. That say that the Avnei Nezer, I think I've mentioned some stories about him before Yantif, so the Avnei Nezer was married to the daughter of the Kutzker Rebbe. That's the Kutzker Rebbe. He's not here today. Kutzker Rebbe is known for his sharp personality. So I guess it was an appropriate shidduch because before that, he had a nezer dating, I guess, the daughter of the Baruch Tam. And the Baruch Tam gave him a farher, he gave him a bechina to see if he knows how to learn, which obviously he did, he was the nezer. And then later on, he gave him another bechina at a later date. So after the second bechina, the Avnei Nezer said to the Baruch Tam, said, now I have to give you a bechina. So the Baruch Tam said, what do you mean you have to give me a bechina? So the Avnei Nezer said, why is it that people give their future son-in-laws bechinas? Because they want to marry the daughter off to a Talmud Chacham. But the Gemara says you should also try to marry the daughter of a Talmud Chacham. So therefore, not only should the prospective father-in-law test the son-in-law, but the son-in-law should test the father-in-law. So how come he doesn't do that? How come that's not the minhag? Because we assume there's a chazaka that probably your father-in-law tested you and his father-in-law tested him, so probably it was already handled. So there isn't usually a need for the son-in-law to give the father-in-law a bechina. But you gave me two bechinas. It means you don't believe in chazaka meikara. You didn't rely on the first one, you gave me a second son. You don't believe in chazaka meikara, so now I have to give you a bechina to clarify for myself, your own Talmud Chacham status. So the Baruch Tam said to him, he said, you're right, but you're also very chutzpahdik, so I don't think you're the proper shidduch for my daughter, so I think you're probably better for the Kutzker Rebbe's daughter. So he ended up, I don't know if he said the last part, but he ended up marrying the Kutzker Rebbe's daughter, and the rest is history. But in any event, so we have a Sefer Shem Bishmul, where you can quote from his father, Yavi Nezer, and his grandfather, the Kutzker, and it's all a part of the whole thing. But in any event, so you could be a halachic mind person, the Chazaka Meikara is part of how you think. So when somebody asks you how you're doing, you say Baruch Hashem. So that is an answer. You're saying that the chesed is how it was yesterday. I was fine yesterday. I'm fine today. And Baruch Hashem, nothing changed. So sometimes chazakas are credible, and sometimes less credible, which is part of what we're seeing throughout the sugya, that it's not always possible to just plug everything into a computer and say a chazaka here is a chazaka there, a rove there is a rove here, that sometimes there's different qualities to the different chazakas. So it could be that that's what the Ramban is saying. That this is simply, this chazaka meikara is not so powerful, it's not so impactful, because it's the kind of thing that's likely to change. So the fact that now we're coming, this is, who knows how old this couple is now, so we're trying to say that at the time of the marriage we can look back and we can say that she was a psula, because she started off as a psula, who knows how much weight to give to that. Other Acharonim explain it differently, what the Ramban is getting at, but in any event, that seems to be the Ramban's approach, which will bring us back to Tosfos, right, that the Ramban is saying that no, this chazaka is worthless. Or this chazaka is not enough. This chazaka is not really, there isn't really a chazkas agufir. So that could be what Tosfos is saying. Okay, so then there is nothing here besides the rov, and ain holchem b'mamar achar harov, so we wouldn't ask the question according to that. While Tosfos Shanim is saying, no, even if you say ain holchem b'mamar achar harov, you have the chazkas aguf, so here Shmuel would agree. So maybe it's about that. Is there a chazkas aguf for now? But you could also disagree for a different reason. You could say that even if I agree with the Balamor, I don't agree with Ramban, there is a chazkas aguf. The chazkas aguf is very nice. But still ain holchem b'mamar achar harov. Right, so then what are we saying? Right, we're essentially saying something else. So why would you disagree with the Tosfos Shanim? Because maybe you hold that Ein Holchem B'Mamon Achar HaRov is a fundamental principle of how Mamonos works. That we do not extract money using Rov. And it doesn't matter what you're going to pile onto it. If you want to be motzi mamon, you need a raya, right? Hamotze mechavero olav haraya. That's the other half of the sentence, right? That you can't be motzi mamon without a raya. And rov is not a raya. And therefore rov and chazaka is also not a raya. That pouring on points onto one side of the equation is not going to change the fundamental hamotze mechavero olav haraya dynamic. Either you have a raya, or you don't. But if you don't have a raya, don't come to me with your rove and your cheskes aguf and your cheskes this, and whatever else. Either you have a raya or not. You follow that point? Josh?
I mean, it's more saying that cheskes aguf isn't a raya.
Right, exactly. Well,
meaning, even if ein holchem achar harov, if we still had another answer, we still could use that.
Right, so that goes back to your question from before, that would the chazaka work by itself? Right, so if chazaka was an absolute raya, so then maybe it would work by itself. Right, so if we boil everything down to this principle of hamotze mechavero olav haraya, so then we'll have to basically answer two questions. First of all, is this a case of motze mechavero? Right, that was Sammy's question. Is there an absolute mochzak here? And if so, so what are we going to need to do to be motze from him? If we've established that it's a motzi mechavera situation, so then what is the raya that's necessary? So you could say, I need an absolute raya. So rov, the reason for ein holchem b'mamon achar harov is it's simply not a raya. So if you come with more not raya things, I'm still going to say no. I'm still going to say, sorry, you're still in the category of a motzi mechavera, and therefore it's not going to be good. So what I think is being set up here, and this is basically, it will, I think, take us to tomorrow's discussion, so we'll just chazer, and if everybody stays with us, we'll be able to daven mincha, that let's just try to get this point down, and we'll then take it to the next stage tomorrow, that essentially the point seems to be like this, that Ein holchem b'mamon achar harov, Why is that? Is it that it's a fundamental principle? If you want to be motzim and amotzah, you need a raya, and rove is not a raya, and therefore nothing else that's not a raya is going to work either. So chazaka doesn't seem to be a raya, or that either isn't a cheskes hagof, or there isn't enough of a cheskes hagof that is a raya here. So therefore, Tosa says, if you hold in Hocham Amarach HaRov, don't come to me with any of that. That might be Tosus's position, that it's an absolute principle. You either have a raya or you don't, but adding more things onto your Rov is not going to make a difference. Or maybe you could say no, that it's not such an absolute principle. It's simply that Rov is generally not strong enough to be Motzi Minamam. Rov could be Motzi if it were stronger. But Rov simply isn't strong enough. But when you give it more power and you give it some extra vitamins, then maybe it could work. Right, so maybe that's the machlokas Tosus and Tosus Yishan. That Tosus says nothing can be motzim and a muchzak without a raya, so rove is not relevant, none of this is going to be relevant, the whole question wouldn't come up, according to us who says, according to we who seek to follow Shimon. But the Tosus Yishan maybe understands it differently and says, no, Shmuel's position that Ein Holch Mamon Achar Rov is basically a quantitative statement. It's basically about the numbers. That Rov is not strong enough. It just doesn't have enough power to it. But if you gave it a booster shot, you gave it something else that has a little bit more power, so then it could work. And maybe throwing in this chazaka is enough. So what we want to discuss tomorrow is, what is the issue with Rov when it works and when it doesn't work? And why is it that in Holcham the Mamanachar HaRov? Is it because it's simply not strong enough that if we could boost it, it would work? Or is it something more fundamental, and that Rov and Chazakas simply don't interact that way, and that Cheskes HaGof is not going to, Cheskes Mamon rather, is not going to yield to a Rov no matter what, and throwing in these factors is not going to help? So?
According to the opinion where it would yield as long as you have enough power with it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So what would that other power be? Would it be
so maybe, yeah, maybe
we just said that we see that would count because this is something which is inevitably going to change. Well, not inevitably.
Only according to the Ramban. That means the Tosu Shanim and the Balamur, I think it is enough. Right? The Tosu Shanim here is saying that if you have a Rove plus a Cheskes HaGuf, then maybe even Shmuel would say it would work. And then the next line, the Gemara is going to tell you why this Rove is not effective here. But you know, according to his reading of the Gemara, is that, yeah, Rove, you come in with your Rove and you win.
If Shmuel says that if his law, if what he holds, right, is that you know, we don't take away from money, right?
Mm-hmm.
How can we just assume that, you know, even if we have more power, that maybe Shmuel would admit to it? If Shmuel's not around to change his case or to give him,
right. So that's, it's up to us to try to understand what's motivating Shmuel. And that's a part of the whole halachic process, that Shmuel comes with a statement, then we'll see tomorrow, and maybe, again, I can give you more Marmar Kumbos about this, I wasn't sure in terms of time-wise, whether I'm happy to provide some of the basic makoros about in Halacha Mamon after our oath, that it's very unclear from the Gemara's why that is true, and if everyone agrees that it's true, and when they agree that it's true. Right? And just a little bit of a preview, one of the major questions that will come out, it's a Gemara, that we do follow Rove for Dine Nefashos, and for capital law, for executing people, we do follow Rove. So the idea that we should follow it to kill somebody, but we don't follow it to take away their money, is hard to understand, right? You think in every way the Kal Vachomer should go in the other direction, both because money is less important than life, hopefully, right? Unlike Jack Benny, when he says, the rapper says, your money, your life, and he says, hold on, I'm thinking. Right? So we normally paskin life is a bigger deal. But also, it's reversible, right? So if you make a mistake with money, so then the Bezdin can say, all right, we made a mistake, now pay him back. But you can't go back. So you think for every reason, if we follow Rove for Nefashos, we should follow it for money too. So we'll see tomorrow that there's a lot more to this discussion. We have to figure out where is Shmuel coming from, why did he say such a thing, and when does he say such a thing. So just to give a quick review of what we've seen so far, and then we'll dive in, that essentially we see that our Gemara throughout in the past few weeks has been kind of struggling with what is the default position here. Is the default position that he is the Mufsak and he should win unless she has some special points, or is the default position that she should win? So it sounds like the default position is that he should win because she needs Edim. Without Edim, apparently she loses. So the Gemara we saw today says, well, why is that the default position? She has a rove. Rove Nashim Mesulis Nisseis. So she should win. So I, but Ein Holcha Mamon after her rove, so it doesn't matter anyway. So one question you could ask, like Sammy said, well, maybe he's not a Mufsak. That we spoke about before, Yantin. But if we assume he is a Mufsak, so Ein Holcha Mamon after her rove, so says Tosfos, you're right. If we were Paskin like Shmuel, you wouldn't have this whole discussion. Ein Holcha Mamon after her rove. But Tosfos Shanim says, no, even Shmuel might have this discussion because you have the Cheskes Aguf that she started off as a Psula. So then we ask, so why would you not say like that? It's a good point. Tosfos Shanim, Balamor, others to say like this, it's a good point. Why would we not say like that? So one way to say it is you don't accept the Cheskes Aguf, you don't think it exists. So we saw, like the Ramban says, that there is no such Cheskes Aguf. We talked about why that might be, because maybe it's given to change, and therefore it's not such a valuable premise, like the third grade girl who's probably married in her 50s, this is not really so relevant. So that's one possible approach. Or you could say, no, that there is a Cheskes Aguf. We recognize the Cheskes Aguf, but it still doesn't help. So that seems to be a machlokus between Tosfos and Tosfos and Shannon, that if we assume there is a Cheskes Aguf, do you say still doesn't help like Tosfos? Or do you say that, no, it would help like Tosfos and Shannon? So we thought that question might depend on what does it mean to say Ein Holcha Mamon Achar Rov? Does it mean that it's simply not the way Rov works? Motzei Mechavel of Araya, you need a Raya, anything less than a Raya is no good. Or do you say, no, that it's just a question of power, that Rove is not strong enough, but maybe if we threw in some more power, we gave it a chazak, we gave it whatever, so then maybe that would change things. So that we'll have to see tomorrow. We look a little bit more about the foundations of that issue of Ein Holcha Mamon Achar Rov and how it fits back into here. Okay, Ben, do you want to show us what Houston? All right. Ashrei Shabbos.